Thanks, Jay. Everybody, good evening. My name's Scott Phillips, and I'm an addict. My sobriety date is December 29th, 2016. And my home group, CA home group, is the Boomerang Group in Newnan, Georgia. We meet Tuesdays and Wednesday nights at 6:30 at Coweta Force. We're on the CA website. So if you're ever in Newnan, come see us. That's why we're there. There are people there for me. I'm just sitting here. I was talking to Jay today. You know, it's Christmas time. He was telling me about y'all's friend Adam. And I look around this room. I see these kids. You know, that could have been, that, in a lot of ways, it should have been me. God had different plans, and man, I'm grateful. I'm so sorry for y'all's loss. You stay around this long enough, you're going to experience some of this. And it just reminds me how important it is that we get inconvenienced, we suit up, and we show up. I've got a sponsor. He's got a sponsor. My grand sponsor's a guy named Ralph White, and he says that recovery is God's gift to you, Scott. What you do with it is your gift back to God. So Jay's right. I found a group of men that have big appetites, and you can look at me and tell I have a big appetite too. But I'm talking about the spiritual appetite. The greatest thing that ever happened to me, frankly, was a drug addiction that tried to kill me. It led me to God. Cocaine, alcohol, and everything that came with it led me to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous. Cocaine Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous led me to a relationship with God. For that, I am extremely grateful. I did not come in here, to be clear, looking for a relationship with power, God, Spirit, Universe. But here we are. It's Saturday night. I've got my wife out here. That's Jackie down there in the front row. Y'all say hello to her when she's done, because she's the one that the book talks about when it says we make people neurotic. There's a neurotic one. Thank you, baby. It's a real treat to be here with y'all tonight. I've got a lot going on, to be totally honest with you. There was a part of me today that was like, man, I just don't have time to be going to Augusta on a Saturday. It's Christmas. I've got two young kids. I've got a mother who's dying of pancreatic cancer, and I'm watching her being eaten alive by this disease. My wife's mother has some issues going on. We've got some life things going on that aren't convenient. And you know what I know is a bunch of guys got inconvenienced, and they did things anyways when life was coming. And they were the one that made this thing attractive to me, right? Because they were sitting up there, and they were communicating. They had these things, these experiences going on that were... Look, I'm not a big believer in triggers, okay? But these guys certainly were going through some life experiences that I said, man, that sounds like a really good reason to go get... can I cuss in here? No, we're in church. To go get bent. But they were doing something different, right? They didn't have it all together. They didn't profess that they were some kind of saints, right? But here they were, and I was desperate, and I needed something, somebody. Right, so like when that thought came into my mind today, I just remember, I was like, thank you, God. I have these opportunities. But I will tell you that I am not fixed, and God has a lot of work done left to do with me, because I can tell you on the way here, my wife, I've got a problem with coffee, and I was hell-bent on getting a cup of coffee. And apparently in Augusta, Starbucks closes at 5:30. And one of my character defects that keeps coming up is that I think people should behave the way I think is appropriate, and anything outside of that, I feel like I need to straighten you out. And of course, that bunch of kids in the Starbucks closing, and my wife saw that I was getting ready to put the car in park and let them know what I thought about millennial employees. And we're going to count this as spiritual progress. I stayed in the car, and so I came here and got some coffee. But look, guys, I was thinking about how I was going to go about this tonight, because my experience keeps changing. But I was the guy growing up that, you know, I never once thought that the disease of addiction and alcoholism was going to get to me, right? I mean, from an early age, right, I was convinced that I was special. I was better than everybody else, right? And I never was introduced or had any introductions to relationship with power or God, right? But I certainly created this idea of a connection of material God, power, right? Being enough, right? Wanting women to have an interest in me when I was younger, or girls, or, you know, and then how was I going to get some kind of affirmation from the outside world, be it my father, be it y'all, whoever it was, right? My idea of that was succeed at all cost and more. Go get more. And in a lot of ways, my story that I'm getting ready to tell you guys, you know, it rewarded me for that. But in a lot of ways that, you know, eventually you burn that candle down. So I was just like a lot of you guys. I started out early. Started out drinking when I was 11 years old. I was with a group of girls out there in Colorado, and my buddy, and we dressed her up real pretty, and she had got a bottle of Smirnoff vodka, and we mixed it with orange juice, and man, I got puking drunk that night. But I will tell you, something happened that night, that first introduction to alcohol. All right, we got snowed in Denver. I got puking drunk, got embarrassed by my mother. I'm 12 years old, but I remember being like, that was fantastic. Right? Like, I wasn't exactly putting all the terminology together and everything, but like, I think a lot of people get sick and they're like, I'm good. Right? But not me. Something switched. And I kept wanting more. So I pursued that, right? I did well in high school. I went to college to go, quote unquote, play football. And I didn't really have interest in going to school. So, you know, I spent a year and basically didn't go to a single class. I thought that maybe I was exempt from going to classes, so I got introduced to partying, and that was great. And then it came time for the second semester of your freshman year, and they found out I hadn't gone to a class, and they said, well, you're going to have to leave, Mr. Phillips. So they kicked me out, which was a great opportunity for me to go down to Athens, Georgia. And I got introduced at the Town Place Commons on the back of a toilet bowl to my first little line of cocaine. And I'll never forget that night. I took that line. I remember I was nervous as I could be. I took that line, and man, till 4 a.m, I felt like a hero. I felt like a hero. Honest to God, I wasn't afraid of women. I wasn't afraid of you. Got in a couple fights and made it out alive. No problem. It was a great night, and it was just that. But like everything else in my life, that became more. You know, I'm not going to bore you with all the details in between, but I progressed. I ended up going back to school. I got through school. I took a job, took a fancy job, started progressing with that. Drugs and alcohol became more and more common and prevalent. I found an environment where, you know, when the book talks about self-centered to the core, right? I found an environment in finance and banking and some places like that where that type of stuff was rewarded. Right. And a group of guys like work hard, play hard, like cocaine was part of the scene. Alcohol was part of the scene. Man, when Bill talked about I had arrived, I thought I had done it. I thought that's what the world expected of me. And man, I was along for the ride. So I did that, and I did it pretty damn well. I was in my 20s. I found myself flying all over the world on private jets, doing high finance. Right. Little by little, things start getting a little bit more regular in terms of my drinking and drugging, and the story progresses. I meet my wife. She just reminded me 20 some odd years ago, right? Yeah. And so somebody asked before we got started how long Jackie and I had been married before December 28, 2016. The answer is 10 years we'd been married, but we'd been together for a little bit before that. But I kind of thought, I saw Jackie getting married and all that is setting up the stage the way I wanted it, right? Like, as long as I made enough money, as long as I took care of everything, right, I was going to rationalize everything that I was doing. Now, the idea of maintaining a faithful, honest relationship was not high on my priority list. You see, all of y'all, people I worked with, people that worked for me, my wife, my kids, my family, everybody that I came into contact with, y'all were here to serve me, right? And I never really, by the time There certainly was a period early in my life where, you know, we talk about this conscious contact with God, right? Where like the consciousness of harming others probably was important to me. But man, that darkness piled up quickly for me. And that was, it became less and less important on how I was harming people. My drinking, my drugging progresses. I find myself having folks suggest that, hey, you know, maybe you should curb your drinking. Maybe, you know, cocaine's becoming a problem, right? So I got introduced to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous to get people off my butts. I found out that you could buy chips online, right? And you could present them to people like your parents and say, look, man, look, I got 6 months. And we're proud of you, boy. Way to go. And, you know, the whole time I'm getting high. So I share that to say it was 19 years from the first time I was introduced to the program to my last drink and drug. But those 19 years earlier, I had zero sincere interest whatsoever in stopping. You know, the first edition says an honest desire to stop. I didn't have that. I just wanted to get the fire off my butt. So I had some more experiences. And, you know, as the book suggests, like this disease we have progressed for me, right? So I found myself a little bit down the road where I would call my wife and we'd have these things called wet lunches and I would rationalize the drinking and all that stuff. Like I'd call her and say, baby, I got to stop by the bar and see the boys after work. And, you know, I'm going to grab a beer, which, you know, the only truth I ever told her where I was batting 100 was, you know, I lied to her 100% of the time when I said I'm going to stop at the bar to have a drink. I never wanted to have a drink in my life, right? So it gets to a place where this is more and more common, the drinking, the drugging. Any time that my wife would take the opportunity to go out of town with the kids, I don't know, maybe some of you guys can relate, right? If she was gone, it was game on, right? And things were becoming pretty progressive at this point. There was a experience where, you know, I was first having my first real introduction with powerlessness when she was out of town and I had been up on a tear and doing the things we do, right? It's about 3 o'clock in the morning and I've convinced myself that I'm having a heart attack. So I called 911. All right. Now they show up. I'm in nothing but my skimpies. They take me to St. Joe's Hospital in Atlanta, where I feel like I know a lot of folks. I go in there and this doctor basically is like, look, man, you're not having a heart attack, you're a drug addict. Don't come back to my hospital. Now, at this point, I'm in nothing but flippers, right? Hospital sandals and a smock. And I'm thinking to myself as I'm coming down of St. Joe's and Emory Hospital and the emergency room, for sure, I'm going to run into somebody I know. So at this point, I call an Uber, right? Because they had taken me in an ambulance. And man, on the Uber app, you can watch the Uber pulling up, right? So I see this thing pulling up the porte-cochere on my app, that little blue dot. And I'm so embarrassed, right? That the second he pulls up that porte-cochere, I look like an escaped convict in nothing but hospital gown, just bolting out the door, jumping this Uber, right? You can imagine what that poor sucker's thinking, right? Like this guy is, you know, out of his mind, which he's right. But here's the thing. I'm having this experience. Most people, if they're going to the hospital in a situation like that, they probably pause, right? I get back home. Remember, it was just me at the house. And I mean, what do you think the first thing I do when I get home is? I had that stuff in the bathroom, and I went right back to it. Thinking a couple hours earlier, I thought I was having a heart attack. You know, a couple of weeks go by, you know, these things are starting to pile up on me. I'd been doing a lot of extracurricular activities. My wife one night, I'd come home late. She wasn't real happy with me. I ended up staying up late and it's like 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm thinking to myself, I've got to get out of this house right before she gets up. And the night before was not a good night. And I was going through my head and I promise you, had you put me in a lie detector test that night, I would have passed that morning. I would have passed because I was thinking as I was leaving, but so I could get out before the kids and Jackie saw me, that I am never going to do this again. Never, ever. And I meant it. I remember walking out the door. We lived in at this house over in Atlanta on Riverview Road, and it was cold. There was a gravel, pea gravel driveway. I'm going to the truck, and I was thoroughly convinced that I was done. I was going to control this and put a stop to it, right? And the craziest thing happened, right? I got to the mailbox, and I got on that telephone. That's it. Back with the dope man. A couple hundred feet before, there was no chance I was going to do this again. Zero. I was trying to participate in my kids' life. I got involved in some coach pitch games, and I'd be at the office, and I like to always keep a little supply in my desk drawer just to kind of like, you know, ease off the middle of the day. And I'd been up the night before one day and reached in that drawer. I knew I had to coach pitch later that afternoon at 4 o'clock, right? That morning, I pull out that drawer. It'd been a long night the night before. I start to take one little key bump, right? Just one, just to edge that thing off, right? And that's all I'm going to have. And that, maybe a cup of coffee, right? Like, this is the part where, like, powerlessness is really starting to make sense to me. But although I wasn't connecting the dots, but it makes sense looking back on it. Something happened, right? Like, an hour went by, right? Knowing that I've got a game at 4 o'clock, right? I've got to show up and I've got to coach to these kids, pitch to these kids. An hour goes by, and that drawer opens itself again. But I swore, just one. Well, look, you guys can, like, I won't take you through the whole timeline, but you guys understand, come 4 o'clock, guess what? It was more than a couple. You see, I'm the type of addict that, like, I can't tell you once I take that first one when I'm going to stop. I can't stop. 4 o'clock, I show up, and I'm lit up like a firecracker for these kids. Putting on sunglasses, trying to chew on some chewing gum so nobody knows. I'd exerted all this power and all these other aspects of my life in terms of earthly things and succeeded. But when it came to this, I failed. Continuously. Almost perfectly. There was hardly a day that went by that I did not ingest some kind of mind-altering substance, right? A lot of cocaine, a lot of other things, and a lot of alcohol. We get up to, you know, Christmas time, December, you know, I think Thanksgiving and Christmas is a big mess. December of 2016, December 29th, Jackie and I had gotten in a fight, you know. I was the kind of guy that, you know, if my wife was the problem, right? Like, she just a nagging wife. Like, if and I could use that, right? Like, I did everything else. Blame her, rationalize my behavior. But she didn't have anything to do with what kicked this off. It was, I was in the throes of everything. And December 29th, I disappeared. And, of course, it's, you know, it's like a, everybody's doing Christmas and family stuff, but not me, right? I had found a place in Atlanta that liked to allow me to come and hang out with a bunch of women. And they didn't mind that I liked to do an awful lot of drugs. So it's Christmas time, and like any good addict, you know, with kids, it's a good time to disappear. So I figured I'd do what all the rest of the addicts do. And anyways, I disappeared, right? And I'd been on a tear. And I remember sitting there, and I'm looking around, and I'm looking in these air vents, and haven't been there for a while, not slept very much, but I don't see any in here, but y'all know what air vents kind of like in apartment buildings look like, right? And I'm sitting around, and all of a sudden I look at one of these air vents, and coming out of that air vent is this little camera thing like this, right? It looked like a little dot, right? And I get up, and I'm like, what in the hell is that? So I get up, I walk up to it, and I've seen enough movies, right, to realize that that's a camera. I get up, I go in the bathroom. There's a camera in there, too. I get up, I go in the living room. Camera in there, too. Uh-oh. Things were getting ready to change, and I vividly remember thinking that blackmail was a good option. Right? that maybe this group was using this video footage as blackmail. That seemed like something I could navigate. That seemed manageable, but God had different plans. So as I'm sitting there trying to think about what's going to happen next, right? One Mississippi, two Mississippi, boom. 13 SWAT team members blow that door down that day. Piles of cocaine, women sitting in there doing things that shouldn't have been doing. God sent, I'm convinced, 13 angels in that room that day. Now, they didn't look like they did in Sunday school class, right? I mean, these guys had assault rifles. They were in vests. I mean, they had the latest and greatest military gear you could buy, all right? That is not the way my Sunday school, the limited amount I had, portrayed angels, but that's what they did. Because, see, I had gotten to a place, guys, like, I had lost the power of choice. Right? There was no stopping anymore, right? And I had exhausted all of these options. So God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. And remember, like, in my head, I was a big deal, right? I thought addicts and alcoholics were the guys under the bridge, right? I remember, like, I will tell you, if you've ever experienced a sting operation like that, it is a pretty intense one, okay? And if you've been on a run for a little while, it'll bring you down pretty quick. And I'll never forget this one cop looking at me, and he was like, man, that was a rush, wasn't it? Like, why I'm handcuffed. I was like, yeah, that's a rush. And so they did the full interrogation. And they took me off to jail. And I spent a little bit of time in jail. And while I'm in jail, I'm thinking, okay, like, I'm going to navigate some drug charges. I'm going to navigate some prostitution charges. But then they hit me with this thing called RICO, which is racketeering. And now all of a sudden I'm looking at 15 years and things are getting real. And so now I'm concerned, right? And I vividly remember sitting in jail that one night. There was two things going on. One was, can I hit my head against this bowl hard enough to kill myself, right? Or two, something's got to change. I was convinced that I would mess up hitting my head against that bowl, that big metal bowl. I didn't think I could do it hard enough to kill me, right? So I was experiencing surrender, right? Something was going to change. I didn't know what it looked like, right? I didn't know that I wanted, that there was going to be a relationship with power. I just knew that, like, I couldn't drink and drug anymore because that was my problem, right? They got me out of jail. They packed me up. They put me on this, sent me off to this real fancy, bougie rehab place out in Arizona, which, by the way, I'm grateful for. I spent 60 days out there, and it was wonderful, right? And it wasn't 12-step, right? But they introduced us to the 12 steps, right? But it was enough to, like, breed this degree of willingness inside me to want to do something different. Right along the time I'm out there, like, news is breaking in Atlanta, like 11 Live News, Channel 2, AJC, CNN picks up the story. One of the things that was media worthy was this place that we were hanging out at on a regular basis was right next to the Dunwoody Police Station. So they didn't like that too much, and they were going to make a point out of this. And so they like to get the story out. So I'm sitting out there at rehab thinking, man, this whole thing is burning down. Right? Everything's burning down. I got a wife. I got two kids. You want to talk about unmanageable? Folks, I didn't know exactly what was going to happen next, right? But I remember in rehab, they said, Scott, you're going to have to go back to Atlanta and find your tribe. And I remember thinking, man, the stuff that y'all are telling me out here, like, nobody back in Georgia talks like this. They just don't. And they said, well, they do. You're going to have to go find them. So I was sharing the story. I landed in March of 2017 back in Georgia, got off the plane and went straight to CA Spearheads in Atlanta. And there was a guy sitting up there. His name was Tarek Khalil, who's now my sponsor. And Tarek, I don't even remember what he said, but it was hyper intense and it was to the point, right? And it seemed really aggressive. Now, remember, I came from this bougie rehab where they told me how much they loved me and what a good boy I was, and it was going to be okay, right? It didn't feel like it was going to be okay, but that's what they were telling me. Now, Tarek was talking about something that sounded very different, all right? And I went up to Tarek after the meeting that night, and this was at a real fancy high cotton Buckhead church, and he said, hey, look, you need a sponsor. And I was like, I'm good, right? I want to be sober, but not that sober. And it is funny to come full circle. So I start hanging out at Triangle Clubhouse. I get a cool guy sponsor that's funny guy, blah, blah, blah. We start going through the steps. Look, I'm not here to judge how anybody does this, right? I'm just going to share an experience with you. I had some guys that started sacrificing their time for me, right? They would recommend to me, hey, why don't you get a 12 and 12? Why don't you get the big book? Read Bill's story, read step one, and then come back and tell me what you think. Then we get to the fourth step, and they give me like this Joe and Charlie checklist, right? Which I was frankly kind of down with because all I had to do was do some checks, right? Then we got to like ninth step type stuff, and like the guys, the sponsor that I had back then, who's a wonderful human being, right? He was simply sharing his experience. And he's like, look, man, when it comes to this men's business, like, let's not harm anybody else. I was like, hey, no problem, chief. You got it, right? You don't want me to harm some other people, I'll leave them out. And so I did that. All right, so let's fast forward because this is where it gets interesting, I think. So we get to a couple years go by. Jackie and I are living in Atlanta. COVID hits. I think I'm pretty plugged in. I'm going to a bunch of meetings. Meeting makers make it, right? That's what y'all told me. And well, that's right. Jay didn't tell me that. But I was hearing meeting makers make it, right? So I thought that I could outwork you. I was talking to somebody else. I thought I could outstudy this book, right? I could rehearse a bunch of lines from the big book. And that would be enough, right? I mean, everybody was talking about, you notice like the first time around, I didn't talk a whole lot about 2 and 3. Everybody, there was talking in Atlanta, there was a lot about like, let's not really talk about God. Like it may turn some people away, all this type of stuff. And I was like, I'm fine with that because I came in, frankly, if there was a God, I'm glad he worked for you. But I don't want anything to do with him, right? My power was becoming the fellowship. Well, COVID happened. Then Jackie and I decided to leave Atlanta and move to Noonan, Georgia, because we wanted to live on a farm. So all of a sudden, like all these people I've been hanging with and surrounding myself with, right? Everybody's kind of removed themselves, right? The meetings aren't happening. The clubhouse is closed down. What am I going to do? Now, I'm a guy that wants to be told he's a good boy. So I maintain these relationships like guys like Tarek, right, along the way. I moved to Noonan, right? And my sponsor, Jesse, at the time, when I'm leaving Atlanta, reminded me, right? I'm grateful for these guys. Like, remember, I am not criticizing this experience because these guys, I stayed sober throughout all this, okay? He told me when I moved, he's like, man, they're going to do things differently when you get down there, right? But you got to go back to the basics. You got to get to the meeting early. You got to put chairs out. You got to clean ashtrays again. Make coffee, right? I had gotten to like spiritual giantness level in Atlanta and wasn't doing that shit anymore. I got to Noonan and all the meetings had broken up. And I had two choices, right? Because I thought meetings were going to keep me sober. One was roll up my sleeves and get involved and we're going to start some new meetings in this town. Or two, drive back to Atlanta every single day because I thought I needed a meeting every single day to stay sober. You see, this relationship with God thing, I wasn't really digging it yet. So I did this, right? Which, by the way, was a great experience. We launched, so, there's a no-name group, Noonan, that meets 6 days a week at noon. That group was meeting once a week when I got there. It is attended by about 25, 30 people a day right now. We started a early bird Alcoholics Anonymous meeting that meets 5 days a week at 7:30 in the morning. And now we have the Boomerang Cocaine Anonymous meeting in Noonan. So I'm a kind of guy that likes to move his feet. But you see, that wasn't enough. Something was missing, right? So as the new guy in Noonan who wants to be important in this pillar of good old AA boy, right? Or CA boy, I remember my good friend Tarek. So I call him and say, Tarek, I think we'd like to do some kind of workshop. You know, I've attended some workshops of yours in the past. I'd like to bring it down to noon, and nobody's down here is doing that. We're going to help everybody, right? So Tarek says, sure, no problem. We'll do a wall workshop, which is what A-Links looks like. Which another good friend of mine, Brandon, is a lot of you guys have sat through a wall. Right now, here's something, here's the strange part. Remember, right? I'm a move your feet guy. Big appetite. At this point, sponsor a lot of guys, show up to a lot, all this stuff. And so, in my opinion, right, I'm having Wall come to Noonan so that I can save everybody and tell them what a spiritual giant I am, that I know these big spiritual giants in this program. Now, something strange happened, right? We did this over 2 days, a Friday and a Saturday. It was very well attended. Little did I know that I was going to be the guy that got shifted the most. I saw these two guys sit up there and talk about this relationship with power that they had. Two grown-ass men. Sorry, ladies, but that was important for me. I needed a real man to convince me that he obsessed and thought and used and behaved and was as hopeless and broken as I was, to convince me that you had the same experience I did. So these two guys are sitting up here, and they start talking about a relationship with power, spirit, universe, God. They start talking about this decision that they made, which I don't remember that the 4 years previous, 5 years previous, this third step decision where they made a contract with God that they were going to be their agent. They were going to be God's agent. He was the principal. I saw a grown man in front of a crowd of people stand up on stage and say, I love God. And I'm not talking about one of these soft boys. I'm talking about some grown dogs. You see, these guys started making this relationship concept with power attractive. And I believed them. They were convincing me that night that something was missing inside me. You see, all these meetings I was making, right? All the guys that I was sponsoring, which, by the way, I feel like I've had to go back and make a bunch of amends to these guys because I feel like I, like, totally shortchanged them. But this was the experience I had. That's all I had. So I did stay sober, but I wanted more. Just like when it came to the drinking and the drugging and all the behavior as that grew and wanting more money, more drugs, more women, more whatever it might have been in my life, like, all of a sudden, like, I'm wanting more of this. You know, like, just being sober says, like, removal of drink and drug is just the beginning. Nothing's truer for me. That's not enough for me. I don't just want to be sober. Like, what's the point of, like, you know, my friend Brand talks about these crumb snatchers. I want the whole damn cake, right? So I was faced with this proposition in my head that I didn't really want to admit, because my ego was like, man, I'm a big deal. I put this whole wall workshop on. Look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me. But inside, I was like, I got to ask one of these guys to sponsor me, and I've got to have a new experience. You see, I kind of thought, like, you do the steps one time, and, like, then you just work with others, and you're going to be good. So reluctantly, I fired off this text, right, to Brandon and Tarek, and I was like, golly, guys, like, y'all talked about a bunch of stuff. Thanks so much for coming down. I think I need a new sponsor. And, like, left it at that, right? And if I'm being totally honest with you, you guys know Brandon. Some of y'all know Brandon. Some of y'all know Tarek. I sent it to both of them, and in the back of my head, I'm like, God, I hope Brandon offers to sponsor me, because Tarek seems like just too much. And guess what happened? Tarek responds immediately, and he's like, no problem. Which is perfect for me. Look, this... guys like Tarek, big appetite guys, right? Maybe guys like me. This is not perfect for everybody. Thank God. Like, God makes all kinds of rise. But I needed a real guy, man, that was going to be like, look, do it or don't. I'm going to share with you the experience I had. And he reminded me that this book, this Alcoholics Anonymous book that he has, what we're getting ready to go do, you know, he started, you know, like we do now. And he's like, let's turn to this page. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, what the hell are we doing? He's like, this is what you know about recovery. You don't know shit. I was like, oh, this is going horribly wrong already. But I need that. Because I'll manipulate and bullshit you otherwise. But I needed somebody who was going to walk me through. So this is what Tarek did. He started at the first page. And we went through that book line by line together. We started doing four steps, started looking a lot different. The second step, right, he said, "Right, I want you to write out your conception of power, Scott. Not the one from your childhood, not the one you think I want to hear, your conception." We get to five, and he starts going down all my character defects, and man, I was like, oh shit, he knows me. You know, my ideas are better than yours. If you'll love me the way I want to be loved, that's great, but don't expect me to love you back the same way. Anybody that doesn't behave or act the way that I think you should, he starts nailing these things. We get to nine, and he looks at me and he says, "Now, how free do you want to be?" He starts talking about, ex-girlfriends. What about the ex-girlfriend's parents? Right? Those women, those girls, you behave the way you did. Who do you think they call? Now, I'm married. So this brought up an interesting conversation for my wife and I. This guy, Tarek, to ask me how free I want to be, baby. I think I need to call some of these ex-girlfriends and their parents. What do you think? Look, everybody's got to have their own path here. Jackie gave me permission to do it. Now, the real hard part for that was, is all those women that I reached out to and their parents, guess how many of them responded to my approach? You see, they hadn't been thinking about me as much as I was thinking about them. I'm not as big of a deal to them as I think I am. But I made sure they know if they ever want that, if they ever change their mind, I will make myself available. So I start sharing this experience with other guys. So look, Tarek told me when we made this third step decision, he said, "Think hard about what's getting ready to happen." Now I'm going to tell you guys something. Since I started sincerely seeking this relationship with God, right? And like going through some really fearful things, right? Like this eighth and ninth step business that I'm talking about, right? A thorough examination of that is a terrifying proposition. But how willing am I to put myself out there and try to clean up, right? Shrink Scott, grow God. You see, this is the only way for me that I found effective, right? There may be other ways. But since then, my life got pretty much turned upside down. Right? I thought if I would just do these things, y'all never told me this, and the book doesn't say it, but like it would be rainbows and unicorns. Right? That's not been my experience. I'm watching my mom be eaten alive by the most awful form of cancer, and she's going to die here shortly. Now, last week, my mother asked me to be the one in charge after she dies to help with my father. Look, y'all, December 29th, 6 years ago, I had a SWAT team come to get me. She's seen the transformation. I have not done this perfectly, far from it. I was unable 6 years ago to go 10 minutes without thinking about the next one. I've regained her trust, and I'm going to lose her. And that sucks. I don't have to like it. But God has a plan. And I hope he uses me. You see, I'm thoroughly convinced that no matter what, like, look, guys, my wife and I are building a house. That's been an absolute shit show. Okay? Everything that I didn't want to have happened. Tarek reminds me, he's like, "Remember when you told me you're going to move to Noonan to simplify your life? Brother, you've done everything but simplify your life." Scott's grand designs fell short again. God had different plans for what was going on. So my wife's mother is having some things. The other night, though, it occurred to me, my daughter had found out that Elf on the Shelf is no longer real. Okay. One of the things when I went to rehab that was important to me was to be a good father. And if I was going to be an ex-husband, which I was certain I was going to be at the time, I wanted to be the best damn ex-husband I could possibly be. How this came about, I have no idea. But that was one of my goals. Okay. My daughter, this past week, found out Elf on the Shelf was fake. My wife starts to bawl, cry. You know, she's all emotional. My daughter looks at my wife and says, "You and Dad have given me something so much more magical than an elf on a shelf." Y'all heard some of the things I was telling you I did before, right? You can imagine I was not present in that young lady's life. And now she's saying that Mom and Dad are magical, that she loves us. Look, God has restored me to some form of sanity. I am far from perfect and fixed. I almost got out of a car and jumped a Starbucks employee's ass about an hour and a half ago because they closed early. That's why I'm here, y'all. Look, the first part of my story doesn't change, right? But I hope that this part continues to progress, right? I know that there's some salacious parts to the first part of the story, but the real impactful thing has been this past year. This was just October of 2021 that it was apparent to me that this relationship with God, power, spirit, universe, I don't care what you call it, was important. And everything went south in terms of everything else, but inside, I have found a way to turn it over to God. Not perfectly. And here's been the really cool part, right? Is sharing this experience with the next guy up. You see, if those guys, all of them, the Joe and Charlie guys, I may even call it watered down AA. I'm careful to do it because those guys gave me everything they had, and I don't want it to come across as me taking a shot at them. Okay, that experience was what I needed then. That's what God teed up. But those guys were there. They got inconvenienced for me. Tarek and Brandon came down to Noonan and put on a workshop. Got inconvenienced. They have full lives, relationships, children, jobs. Took away from their weekend and moved me. So I'm not going to do the same for somebody else. You know, I'm not advanced enough to be over some of my resentment of some of this spiritual thief stuff I see, right? I see these guys, they come in, they get theirs, and they go back out. I'm good. I got the lady back. I got the job back. Got some money in my pocket. I'm going to make a bunch of meetings. But they're not sharing it with the next guy. You see, if those guys didn't do what they did, speaking of, Tarek and Brandon are doing a wall right now. Both those guys have some serious life shit going on right now. I promise you, both of them are inconvenienced right this second. How do you not share this with the next guy? How do you not do that? So when guys like Jay call and they say, "Hey, look, come on down here to Augusta on a Saturday night." Even when I don't want to, okay? I got stuff. Maybe one of y'all heard something. Maybe one of y'all are having an experience like I did where it's like all of a sudden this idea of a relationship with power and how these 12 steps did it, I don't have to think about it, right? I don't have to study for a test. I just have to do it, right? And I will tell you in my experience, finding somebody that has had these experiences is important. Be careful who you pick. Find the guys. And I will tell you something. It's the craziest thing. My relationships, my best friends today are guys from this fellowship. How does this happen? I didn't want anything to do with y'all. I thought this was a cult. I thought y'all are drinking Kool-Aid. I didn't want anything to do with it. And now here I am. So I don't have to understand it all. I know that I still have a long ways to go. What I can tell you is that I have not found it necessary to drink or drug in a little bit. The obsession has been lifted. All the things that the rehabs told me were triggers, it hasn't entered my head. Now, has my character defect shown out in other ways? You bet your ass. I'm working on it. And that's why I keep some big appetite guys next to me. And they tell me, and my wife. You guys want to, if any of you guys have a spouse, take your sexual idea about what kind of husband you want to be and ask your wife if you're hitting it. I need people to check me. It's important to me. I want to remain willing and honest and open to this, and I want this relationship with power to grow. And I think the best way I can do that is to make myself available in a service to the next guy. Shrink, Scott, grow God. So I hope that some of you guys I've seen before, and it's good to see y'all again. I hope I keep seeing y'all. I hope that for any of you that are just starting this thing or coming back, right, you take your experience and you suit up the next guy, because it sounds like you guys put a soldier down today. And who knows? I don't know why that wasn't me. But I darn well don't want to test other than the grace of God. But I will tell you, I think this thing that Ralph told me about what I do with recovery is my gift back to God. The best thing I know to do is like make myself available, get uncomfortable, get inconvenienced. So Merry Christmas, everybody. I'm grateful to be here. I appreciate y'all having me. And it's always good to see y'all. Thanks. Yeah.